The title in the program was a working title that Joe Salerno and I came up with some months ago. This is the title that best fits what I actually wrote. My background is that I'm a historian, and for many years I taught at the University of Adelaide in South Australia a course on film and history, in particular war films and history. And the idea behind that was I would show films about war, films made by people who had some experience of war, either as a director or as a novelist upon whose work the film was made. I also used film a lot in my teaching for general survey courses of modern European history. And then in the 1990s, I worked very closely with Marty Zupan at the Institute for Humane Studies, who introduced a program called Liberty in Film and Fiction, which was one of their summer seminars that went for nearly 10 years. And so my interest in film goes back a long time. This paper really has three components to it. It's 58 pages long, so I won't read it to you. But if you're interested, you can... my website, davidmhart.com/liberty, has all the details, and you can download all the material. What we can see on this image here is one of the great sort of artistic representations of liberty in the 19th century, Eugene Delacroix's Liberty Leading the People at the Barricades, which he did in 1830, and that's sort of like the cover image of my website. But this is, I think, very important that libertarians or people who have sympathy for liberty in their writings or in their filmmaking need to be able to draw upon standard or agreed upon images that have evolved over centuries to represent liberty, like Marianne, who is this is Marianne, but also the model for the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty, not too far away, is a compromise of, there was a radical Marianne who was bare-breasted and carrying a sword, and there was a conservative Marianne who was fully clothed and carrying a code of laws. And there was a big debate in France for the, what do we give the Americans for the 100th anniversary of their revolution, and the conservative Marianne won out. I'm not sure that would... Well, that would be quite an interesting way to greet people into New York Harbor as a bare-breasted Marianne. So what I do in my paper, the title is Some Thoughts on an Austrian Theory of Film, Ideas in Human Action in a Film about Frédéric Bastiat, who was an economic journalist and theorist back in the 1840s in France. So the paper has an historical dimension to it, where I'm interested in looking at films that were very good at depicting or displaying economic and political ideas without boring the crap out of people, right, too much talking. And we all have a list of films I'm sure we could draw upon that were our favourite, either films of ideas or political films. And I have several dozen listed in this paper where I give the brief summary of why they're interesting and important. Then there's a theoretical component here, because as I was working on this project, I kept thinking about what Ludwig von Mises said about the connection between ideas, interests, and human action. And I'll read you a quote about that later on, because Mises basically says that people have ideas, their ideas help determine what they think their interests are, and the human action that they take is to try and realise those interests. In a film, we're working backwards, right? We see action on the film. Can we, as a viewer, or can we, as a filmmaker, get people to infer certain ideas because of the action that we see depicted on film? Right. So it's like Mises in reverse. And if that's, I would like to think that a clever filmmaker who had libertarian sympathies might be able to use that as a technique to make a good film about ideas. Here are some thoughts on presenting ideas in film. These are a list of some of my favourite films about ideas. I'm sure you'll all have yours. Akira Kurosawa's The Seven Samurai. It's about private defense organized by peasants who won't be protected by the state. Right? This is anarcho-capitalism. But Kurosawa doesn't tell you that. But that's what it's about. Kubrick's Spartacus. Spartacus never gives a verbal defense of why freedom and individual rights are important. What we see, though, is his mistreatment as a slave and his natural desire to want to get away from that. Right? No speechifying at all. The film that I was particularly interested in as a sort of jumping-off point for this paper was Warren Beatty's film Reds, which is about the American communist journalist John Reed, who goes to Russia when the Bolshevik Revolution breaks out, and writes his glowing report about how wonderful the Russian Revolution is. And to this day, students who do first year Russian history read John Reed's book as a wonderful eyewitness account of the revolution. Warren Beatty makes a film about this, which is very left-wing, starring himself as John Reed, which wins several Oscars in 1981. And so I thought, well, what we need is a sort of classical liberal libertarian version of Warren Beatty's film Reds to depict. And that's where Bastiat comes in, because he was involved in the 1848 revolution. He was a hardcore laissez-faire economist and libertarian thinker, and he lived through this incredible revolution that's not really very well known outside of France. And even in France, all the historiography about the 1848 revolution is socialist. And yet people like Bastiat are involved in this. So these are other films that I won't have time to talk about. Recently, there have been these other films produced by left-wing filmmakers which have done reasonably well. Just in the last year or so, Der Junge Karl Marx came out, the young Karl Marx. Right, last year was the bicentennial of Marx's birth, and a young Haitian Marxist filmmaker got funding, 12 million euros, to make this film about this bromance between Engels and Marx in France, in Paris, in the 1840s, exactly when Bastiat was also there writing his economic stuff. But his Marx and Engels story gets turned into a film, but I can't get my screenplay, which I've written about Bastiat, made into a film. There's another one here. Issued by the British Film Institute, very prestigious film body in Great Britain, about Win Stanley, who was regarded as one of the first communists. He was called a digger in the English Civil War, a leveller. But I've just put on the Online Library of Liberty webpage 300 political tracts written by levellers, most of whom were not communists, but who were proto-libertarians. They believed in free markets, free trade, free speech, limited government. They're not commies. And yet, you know, this guy makes a film about probably the only communist leveller that ever existed, and the British Film Institute is, you know, promoting it as one of their classic, you know, reissues. The theoretical part of the paper deals with what Mises had to say about ideas and interests and action. I won't spend much time on that, just to refer you to Theory and History and Human Action, where he says things like, in the world of reality, life, and human action, there is no such thing as interests independent of ideas, preceding them temporally and logically. What a man considers his interest is the result of his ideas. And then the second one, that was from Theory and History, the second one from Human Action, action is preceded by thinking. Thinking is to deliberate beforehand over future action and to reflect afterwards upon past action. Thinking and acting are inseparable. Acting, a very interesting word here in the context of filmmaking. Thinking and acting are inseparable. Every action is always based on a definite idea about causal relations. And what I was trying to do was kind of reverse engineer that. You know, so what ideas does the viewer infer? What ideas does the viewer infer motivated the actor when they see action on the screen? And how can the filmmaker try and use that to make a better film about ideas? So I wrote 3 years ago a screenplay about Frederick Bastiat in the 1848 revolution, which I called Broken Windows. If you know anything about Bastiat, you'll get the joke. It's one of his great essays. Now, one of the things I considered was, you know, how cinematic was the life of Frederick Bastiat, because, you know, you have to have an interesting character. He was a gentleman farmer who lived in the south of France. He lived in the Basque country. It was very spectacular, very unusual, with Spanish influence, Basque influence, wine-growing area near Bordeaux. He was a cultured man. He was described as having a Rabelaisian wit, which meant he liked telling dirty jokes, probably, and satirizing politicians. He lived in France when there was incredible turmoil, food crises, high protection,
the corn laws being challenged in England by the Anti-Corn Law League, free trade being introduced by Richard Cobden, him trying to start a similar intellectual and political revolution in France. There's the rise of socialism, there's a right call for democracy because of the very restricted voting system in France. There was political dissent, civil disobedience, and very brutal crackdown by the police. Then, of course, there's the revolution of February 1848, in which Molinari and Bastiat were deeply involved, almost, you know, not quite fighting on the streets, but being in the streets when the fighting was going on. Bastiat getting elected to the parliament and trying to introduce libertarian reforms. And then, you know, there is the drama of him trying to finish his major theoretical treatise, Economic Harmonies, before he died. And he had, I think, throat cancer, extremely painful. And there's a race against time for him to do this, and he only finishes Volume 1, not Volume 2. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a love interest. Now, in the film Reds, John Reed, or you know, had a love interest. What is it, Diane Keaton? I think yes, Diane Keaton. And I couldn't find a Diane Keaton in the Bastiat story. And as an historian, I was very reluctant to invent one, right out of whole cloth. I thought, no, can't do that. But I found a flirtatious relationship that I thought I could exaggerate slightly. You know, so. Anyway, this is the house he lived in the south of France. Very interesting. Too far away or the wrong angle. He was born in the town of Bayonne. This is part of the Basque region of France. This is the garrison. And during the 1830 revolution, the garrison wasn't sure whether to side with against the Bourbon monarch, Charles X, and support Louis Philippe. Bastiat, as a young man, he was only 29, went to the garrison to try to persuade the soldiers, the officers there, to sympathise with the revolution. They stayed up all night drinking red wine, which was, of course, the local product. Bastiat was so engaging, he sang political songs, he did parodies of poems and plays, which they all knew. He won them over, and that was his first engagement in a revolution. So this is the man. He's a very interesting character, a bit of a character. Some of the shots that you could do to show his background of his life in the south of France. He lived in an area called Les Landes, which is heath country. And the farmers, the sheep farmers in the heath country, used to wear stilts so they could see where their sheep were amongst all the clumps of heath. And this is really weird. I mean, this is just so strange. And so this is a way in which a filmmaker could make the background of Bastiat interesting and to engage the modern viewer. Here's another sort of reason why that his life is cinematic and interesting. When he was dying of throat cancer, his love interest or his flirtatious relationship. She was a wealthy woman who ran a salon in Paris, wife of a wealthy manufacturer. She was able to rent for him one of these Louis XIV hunting chateaus, where he spent months and months and months writing the Economic Harmonies, because he was so busy, he was so distracted by political events and his activities as a politician, that she said, "You're not going to finish this book, Freddie, unless you, you know, tuck yourself away in this hunting lodge," and that's where he wrote Economic Harmonies. He used to love horse riding, so when he had a writer's block, he would go horse riding through the woods and all these things. So his life is very interesting. Paris, of course, is also cinematically very interesting, but very hard to reconstruct because a lot of the architecture has been destroyed or pulled down. Here we have one of the very first photographs of the period. These are the barricades that were set up in the streets of Paris during the 1848 revolution. It happened twice, once in February and then once in June. And Bastiat was on the streets, so he would have seen and witnessed, you know, the shooting of by troops of ordinary Parisian people. There's also a sort of interesting architecture about Paris that can, in one way, can just help transmit ideas. And this is sort of like a static way in which ideas can be presented. France was surrounded by three walls. Right, these are physical structures that were built. So every time you went into or out of Paris, you had the presence of the state. You were inspected, you were ransacked by customs officials, your property was interfered with, and you had to pay taxes on consumer goods that were brought into the city. So this is a gross violation of your rights, and it was symbolised by these structures. This was the original customs wall that was built in the 1780s, and during the first French Revolution, the gates on these walls, that was one of the first things the people of Paris burnt and tore down. They hated it so much. In Bastiat's lifetime, in 1841 to 1844, this new military wall, the red one, was built by Adolphe Thiers, and that was designed to stop the British from ever occupying and threatening Paris. But it turned into a military wall with all these military bases around it. And the critics at the time said, this is a massive waste of money to build all this because it'll be obsolete soon. But again, it was a reminder, every time you went through the wall or under it, it was a symbol of the state, right? And this is a way in which a filmmaker could make it look so oppressive that, you know, and these are individual forts around the city. And 40,000 troops were stationed in these forts, and of course, the critics said, well, they're not there to protect us, they're there to repress anyone who rises up in rebellion, which is exactly what happened in 1848. So this is some more pictures of the walls, so I won't. This is a typical barricade that was thrown up. And the idea was that it was blocked for troops and they would be tied up with an iron chain. And the only way the troops could demolish these was to bring the artillery in and fire the artillery down the streets to destroy these things. And Bastiat and Molinari were walking up and down the streets between these barricades, handing out free trade and free market literature to the workers and the citizens, trying to persuade them. Very interesting. This is a map showing the thousands of barricades that were thrown up. All those little black crosses on the roads were barricades. This was from a police inquiry after the revolution. So we have all sorts of interesting things going on. one of the most obvious ways in which ideas can be expressed in film is just through direct expression, like conversations or meetings where people are discussing. Like, well, there's some very good ones in Reds where these, or political clubs or whatever. And the thing is, you don't want to have too much of this conversation, this direct conversation, because it's very boring for the viewer. So I've studied quite carefully, you know, how good films about politics have used, or, you know, to what level do they use these direct ways in which ideas can be expressed. These are all online. I did an illustrated essay using a lot of these images to go with my screenplay. But there were political clubs which were repressed by the police. There were outdoor banquets because political parties and organisations weren't allowed, so people would gather. And instead of giving speeches, they would have toasts. And the police would be around the outside trying to determine when... Was it a short speech or a long toast? and Bastiat and his friends also attended these things. But there's a whole range of things here that I think were interesting, but my time has run out. And I urge you to go and have a look at the full collection of these images, because his life was very interesting, full of interesting images as well as interesting ideas. But the thing is, how do we convert that into a film? But the Marxists can do it, why can't we? Thank you.